You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Richard Boxall.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Mikko Kohonen secures a second European Tour title with a stunning victory at the Volvo China Open.
Well, amazing. Yeah, it was a very tight day between us three. It was a great battle and managed to get on top. Great to have this second win now.
It was a fine finish from the Finn, who overcame Frenchman Benjamin Hébert in a playoff.
It's been a good week, of course. I'm very happy with this second place. Mikko played great today, no mistake. Great putting, so I knew that I had to probably make 400 to keep the lead and win the tournament. But I did only three. It was good, anyway.
A look back at the best of the action to come, plus we'll also preview the next event, the Betfred British Masters. Dan Roebuck, and I'm joined by European Tour winner Richard Boxall.
Morning.
Boxy, how are you?
No, I'm not well. Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad.
Do you know, right. I thought that today, or certainly this week, because I've not seen you for a month or so, that
you'd be
full of the joys of spring, because I was just watching television the other day. I saw an advert that is suggesting John Wick 3 is coming out.
No.
And I know what a big fan you are of the franchise.
Don't you start with those.
Have you got tickets for the opening night in Leicester Square?
I've got more tickets. I'm going behind the scenes and going backstage afterwards, which
Excellent.
I'm looking forward
Fantastic.
To.
Fantastic. And you'll meet John Wick himself.
Hopefully.
He's probably on another revenge sort of heist thing.
You know the rules.
We've also got golf writer Ben Coley with us. Ben, who's training for a marathon, I believe. Ben, how's the training going?
Hi, gents. Yeah, it's going all right, thank you. I finished my run the other day and then realised I'd have to do the same run four times without us stopping to finish marathon, a little soul-destroying. But
Ben, when is it?
It's in October. I'm running the Yorkshire Marathon, so apparently it's an easy marathon. So
never heard of one of those.
No, never heard of one of those. How do you step up your distances?
I started with 3 miles, and that was a stretch. But I'm on to 6 already. So, but apparently you try and add no more than about 10% every week. And if I keep doing that, I'll get to about 20 miles with a month to go, and then see if we can get the extra 6 on the day.
You'll get and then walk the last 6 possibly. I had a friend at Sky, one of the producers, Jim Catoys. He did the marathon. He did a lot of training for it and all that. The one that that was on April 28th, funny enough, last Sunday. He did do it, but he said he struggled the last half.
Is it true
go on.
I was going to say, is it true that you don't run a marathon until you run a marathon?
Yeah, the advice is just go up to about 20 miles.
What's the point of that? You don't know if you can do it.
The adrenaline will carry the rest. Well, that's true.
Are you actually going to do a marathon before you do a marathon, though?
I'm going to go up to 20.
What happens if you can't do that final 6?
I'll have failed at something else. We move on.
Well, it was a marathon for Mikko Kohonen to get his first win, which was less than a year ago. He managed to get his second win on tour after a playoff victory over Benjamin Hébert at the Volvo China Open. In his late 30s now, Boxy.
Yeah.
All good things come to those who wait. He's done really well, hasn't he?
He has, listen, the Shot Clock Masters obviously was a fantastic win. He had been threatening, I have to say, Mikko Kohonen. Kohonen, that's not right. Kohonen. Yeah, he had been threatening, through a few tournaments, but hadn't quite finished it off in the final round, but did finish it off nicely in the final round at Shot Clock Masters last year. And then the Volvo China Open to receive his gold jacket for winning the Volvo China Open. It was an excellent weekend, 65-66 over the weekend. Around the par 72 Zhenzhen course is pretty good play.
I must admit, Ben, I thought it was a bit of a strange course because we saw players get into really good positions but then come unstuck on what I thought were fairly easy holes. On Saturday, Ashen Wu, I think, got 4 clear and then went bogey, 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 bogey. We saw Jorge Campillo hit the front with, 4 or 5 holes to play, and then again went bogey, bogey. It didn't seem a tricky course, but players were misstepping all over the place.
Yeah, and Hao Tong Li went double bogey and then quadruple bogey, which kind of ended his chance before he finished really well. It was a bit strange like that. And like you say, a lot of the time from very good positions. But it was the fun setup. I really liked that they pushed the tee forward. I thought that added real drama to both the 72nd hole and the playoff. And it kind of threw up those players, Hébert, Campillo and Kohonen, who are very, very similar. They're sort of no-frills golfers, quite steady. And it was interesting that type of player, rather than the big hitter that you might have thought would come alive on a really long, soft golf course. And for Hébert, I mean, you need not look far for inspiration. I know he'll be frustrated not to have won. But obviously with Jorge winning last week and Corhon and what he's done over the last year, he can take inspiration from that and break his own duck in the near future, I'm sure.
I think the good thing for Hubert, you know, is he's won 6 Challenge Tour events. So, you know, and you know what it's like, Ben, winning is winning.
So I'm told, yeah. But I mean, it has to be valuable to him. And he didn't do a great deal wrong. I mean, he birdied the final hole to get into the playoff. And just where his drive finished on 18, it's one of those you sort of drive the green and I guess the margin for error with the driver is quite wide. And actually missing left in the fairway where he was, it just left a really tricky chip. And we'd seen Campillo run it 20 feet past in regulation. It's just a really hard position. And he was a bit unlucky to end there, I think.
Well, Gahonen, of course, was our winner. And he played the last, I thought, fairly straightforwardly. I know that Hubert in the playoff hole looked to make the green again as he did in regulation, but he sunk a very decent putt, didn't he, to win the playoff at that first hole boxing?
Yeah, he did. Listen, anything you hold to win a playoff is a nice one to roll in. But, it was 11 or 12 footer, but he rolled it in nicely. Listen, the thing about Mikko Kuhonen, he's a good, solid player now. There's no question about it. You know, he's the kind of player, the way he goes, Ben, you'd think possibly he could pick up a win a year, you know, as long as he misses out on injury.
Yeah, I mean, now he's broken the door down or whatever, definitely. And he's always been a player, or for quite a long time now, has been a player who makes loads of cuts. And with that sort of player, all you need is that hot weekend with the putter. And that's pretty much what he put it down to. And all of a sudden, you're cashing a massive check and potentially picking up a trophy. So I'm sure he'll have eyes on getting into some majors and also the Olympics next year, because he was very, very close to making it in 2016. But he's very much in pole position to do so next year. So it'll be interesting to find out whether that's on his radar at all.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've got to make, hay while the sun shines in situations like this. It's not coming to him as he's been to Q School an awful lot, and it's coming to him a little bit later. He's going to try and take every advantage of his current world ranking and what he's done this year.
Is that to me?
Yes,
you're
it is to me.
That
yes,
question.
It is to me. Well, we're just chatting.
You said, is he going to take advantage? He'll take massive advantage.
I'm just saying
advantage.
You should do. I'm
yeah,
saying
if you're a young, hang around
I'm saying
forever.
If you're a younger man, you might be a little bit more considered with your schedule, and you might think, look, I might be able to bypass this event.
Yes.
You know, you're not going to try and grab everything with two hands. And when it comes to you later in life, maybe you will do.
Yeah, listen, though, you know, those sort of opportunities that are coming to him now don't come to people when they're 21, 22. They do sometimes. But Mikko is in a position now, and I wouldn't blame him playing in anything he could possibly play in.
Well, we can put that to the man himself,
because
I'm pleased to say that Volvo China Open champion Mikko Kuhonen joins us on the Race to Dubai show. Mikko, congratulations, first of all. We've just been talking in that last segment about the fact that success, proper European Tour success, has come to you fairly late in your career. Obviously, we hope that you go on for a good few years yet. But with your mindset now, does it make you feel that you want to grab everything that comes your way? Can you be as considered as you might have been if you win at 2021?
Well, that's a good question. And thank you for the congratulations, first of all. And just some players start playing well later, and some players start playing well in their early 20s. So I think that it's just a matter of a person.
Mikko, Richard Boxall here. I would like to ask you, how good was your putting over the weekend?
It was pretty good, yeah.
Yeah.
I made basically everything inside 10 feet and a few over 30 footers even. And yeah, it was one of the best putting weeks ever.
Mikko, I was just wondering if you've got eyes on what's ahead. I know you've not had a lot of time to sort of take stock after winning on Sunday, but are you thinking about the Olympics at all? Because I know you only just missed out on that in 2016. I'm sure representing Finland would be something you'd love to do.
Yeah, I'd love to do that, yeah. And I think I'm in pretty good position now to go into the Olympics, but it's not really on my mind, the next tournament being the PGA, and I was fortunate to get in there now, so... Yeah, I like to keep it pretty close.
Mikko, I want to ask you something from an ex-pro's point of view. And going slightly off your win here, you did win the Shot Clock Masters last year, which is all about, you know, quick play. With the new rules that have come in, I've been watching it very closely from January the 1st. Do you think the rules, especially with the pin in, which, by the way, I think looks awful, but do you think it has quickened up play or not?
Maybe some occasions, yeah. Longer putts, I mean, a really long putt, you don't have to mess around with the pin because basically everybody keeps it in. But shorter putts, I wouldn't few short putts with the pin.
No, do you think it's an advantage for the pros, though, Mikko, in the respect of keeping the pin in? I mean, for amateurs, keeping the pin in, yes, it does quicken up play. There is no question about that. But for the pros, yeah. I don't think it quickens it up at all.
Well, probably not. No, you're probably right.
Yeah, no, well, anyway, as an ex-pro, I just wanted to know what your point of view was, you know, what you thought of it, that was all.
Bring it back to your win in China, your second win in 12 months or so. When did you feel comfortable over that last day? Because we saw an awful lot of players throwing some massive scores on holes. Victor Dubuisson, a double bogey on the par 5, 13th. We saw Hao Tung Lee throwing some big scores, Sean Crocker as well. Suddenly you saw 6s, 7s, 8s on scorecards, but you managed to keep it together. Just tell us about how you felt playing down the stretch.
I felt pretty good all day, and I didn't look the leaderboard too much. I obviously knew what Jorge and Benjamin were doing, but apart from that, I just focused on my own game, tried to focus on my own game, and managed to do it pretty well. I just thought, let's take one shot at a time and try to do that all day, and it worked out pretty well, yeah.
Mikko, to what extent was your caddy valuable? Because am I right in saying you've got a new relationship with Nick Mumford, who's a very, very experienced? He's caddied for Francesco and Anders Hansen. And very, is that a new relationship you've got going there?
That's a new relationship, yeah. We started in Morocco, so second tournament only. So yeah, that's been working really well, yeah. Nick is a wonderful guy and true professional caddy.
Did you have a chat to your caddy when it came to the last? Because obviously Benjamin Hibbert in regulation went for the green. I mean, as far as you were concerned, were you never going to get there? Was it an option for you?
I wasn't going to get there, no. I knew I had to make birdie after Benjamin hit the green, but I couldn't reach the green, so.
Mikko, you're now inside the top 100. What are your thoughts now on the majors? I mean, it must be great to be in that position.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, new challenges.
Yeah.
Nice to go to America, Bethpage Black. I mean, must be a difficult golf course, seeing it on TV, and I'm pretty excited, yeah.
I'll bet you are. You good luck in those. I'll be watching those.
Mikko, obviously, it's only very recently that your sort of predecessor, I guess, Mikko Ilunen, retired. Can you tell me about like what it means to you to be the sort of leading Finnish golfer and whether there's any your friends on tour with the guys like Cal Samuja and Kim Koivu and Tapio Pulkkanen? Do you have that sort of bond with your fellow countrymen that you can take when you're traveling all around the world from Morocco, China, etc.?
Yeah, we have a pretty good bond with the Finnish guys. Obviously, a big loss that Mikko retired, and it was a little bit weird situation not having him around. And maybe the guys looking at me a little bit, being the leading player. And we were a little bit confused there for a few weeks. But now it's starting to set in and everyone's doing their own thing again.
Well, there were certainly a lot of players that were very pleased when you won on Sunday. How pleased were you with the jacket that you received from the sponsors and all concerned with the channel? Because I thought it was very fetching.
Yeah, very fetching. I mean, I have it at home now and a friend of mine actually wrote on Twitter, "Do you have that Steven Seagal jacket?"
Are you going to wear it a lot? Are you going to take it on tour with you?
Are you going to wear it at the Olympics?
I don't know. Maybe if the Team Finland allows me to.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, it's golden. Definitely. There's no doubt about that. I think it's very fitting. So Mikko, when are we going to see you next?
At the PGA, yeah.
That's so PGA next, and has your schedule changed between now and the PGA and so on and over the course of the latter spring months into the summer?
Well, we'll see about that. I was supposed to play British Masters, but obviously I didn't know, and I might play in Denmark after the PGA. I haven't decided yet, but we'll see.
Well, we really enjoyed watching you in China over the course of the last week, and we wish you well for the remainder of the season. Thanks for coming on the Race to Dubai show. We will speak again soon. Thanks, Mikko.
Thank you very much.
Excellent stuff. Nice to hear from the winner, wasn't it, from yesterday? And what also slightly threw me there, Dan, I don't know whether it threw you, Ben, or not, but, you know, I know you're laughing, so you must have heard it when he said, "So cool, Honan," and I thought, I'd loved him to have come back with Roebuck.
I was going back to my old grammar school days there. Boxall.
Boxall.
Now then, Coley. It all came flooding back. That's his nickname. He likes to be called Coley.
He does now.
That's what he's going to be known for.
He's a nice chap. He's very quietly spoken.
In your wardrobe, either of you.
Yeah.
Have you got a gold jacket?
Gold jacket.
Do you know you're thinking about this, Boxy? No, Ben, have you got one?
Absolutely not. No.
I've got a beige one.
Do you know what? When I think about golfer's attire, Ben, and I look back at all those old films and footage that you see of the 70s and sort of 80s, and there's some wacky stuff then. Do we still get that now? Do we miss that?
Well, I guess it's fitting that we're talking about Mikko Korhonen, because his compatriot Tapio Pulkkanen at least has that trilby that he wears.
Yes, he does. That's a bit odd, isn't it?
That's about as maverick as it gets, isn't it? Which is, you know, it's a trilby. It's, so, yeah, perhaps we don't get the same sort of variety as in Boxy's day.
No, absolutely.
I can
not
imagine you, Boxy, with sort of like 14-inch flares or something.
Yeah, they were red trousers with a white belt.
Yeah, white
ironing
belt.
Board stomach, long flaxen hair, looking beautiful.
Yeah, there was an odd one out there. It may well have been only ironing board stomach.
So the wok. I brought the wok to iron my shirts on. What was I going to say to you, Ben? I spoke to Tapio Pulkkanen. You call him Pulkkanen, do you?
Oh, I'll go with you. Pulkkanen.
Pulkkanen, I go with Pulkkanen. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Tapio, we call him that. Those hats, those pork pie hats, I thought he had a few of them, but I saw him on the 17th, which was the new par four at Morocco, and he only takes two with him all week. I thought he would have brought more. You know, you think he'd bring at least four, wouldn't you?
Do you think he's looking for a sponsor?
So. Perhaps when he wins, he'll be able to. I always think, why has Jorge Campillo still not got a hat sponsor?
That's a very good point.
Maybe he doesn't want one like Robert Rock never wanted one, did he?
But then why
Robert's
wear a
got
hat?
Beautiful
he's got a
hair.
He's got a lovely full head of hair as Jorge. Why wear a hat? I don't
exactly.
Understand.
Yeah, I always looked stupid in a hat. I mean, I look stupid without a hat, but, you know, I always thought a hat made me look worse or a. Visor? What do you call it?
Visor.
Oh, it's a tough one, isn't it?
It's visor.
No, I never. It was like playing golf in shorts, Ben. You know, whenever I used to play shorts, all of a sudden you could see your knees and all that. I mean, I didn't like all that.
You remember that?
No, I'm with you there. I don't play golf in shorts, partly for the members, but also it just doesn't feel right. Yeah.
No, it doesn't feel right at all.
12 trips to European Tour qualifying school. I didn't want to ask Korhonen, I mean Mikko, that.
he's still on the line, he's still listening.
Yeah, but, I mean, 12 trips is a lot. I mean, at some stage, you think, do you know what?
Not terrible, but it's frightfully
depressing. Do you
know what,
let's get back to the Alps Tour here and call it a draw.
Well, no, let's get back to doing something else.
Yeah.
You know, listen, I went back to the school when I was 30. I turned pro when I was 20, 21. Mm. Went to La Manga, went to the players' school. It's all right when you're 21, you know, you can cope with that. But then when I got to 38 and I missed my card and I thought, you know, I went back to school. I got a 23rd card, but I just thought this is for young boys, not for men that are, you know, that have a massive mortgage and two kids and I need to do something different.
Ben.
He was sympathetic there, Ben, wasn't he? Did you hear that?
Yeah,
did you hear that? His voice nearly called me Boxall as well.
There's some Boxy. Is he going to be a player that's, you know, you preview the events every week, I'm talking to Ben now, that he's going to be on your radar? Do you think he's had his moments in the sun? Do you know what I mean? There are certain players that you think I've got to stay the right side of. Is he going to be one, or do you think that might be it for a while, or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's difficult to answer because in one respect, he's very, very consistent, which is a really good starting point. I know when he first came on the tour, he was sort of known for making loads of cuts but never finishing close to the lead. But obviously now he's sort of changed that over the last year. He's won twice and he's been second and third as well. But he's not a very fashionable player. You know, I don't think he's a player all of a sudden everyone's going to get carried away with because of his age, because of the way he plays. For me, he's... With respect, he's going to be a bit like a slightly less prolific Yuse Loughton because this is his level. And, you know, do I think he's going to go and win the British Masters? Well, he's not playing the British Masters, but go and win the Scottish Open or something like that? Probably not. But can I see him winning again once a year, once every 18 months in events like the China Open? Definitely.
As regards the runner-up beaten in the playoff, it was, of course, Benjamin Hébert, who was pleased with his performance despite missing out on a first European Tour title.
Yeah, it was a good one. Mikko played great today, no mistake, great putting. So, I mean, I knew that I had to probably make four under to keep the lead and win the tournament. But I did only three, but it was good anyway.
It was an excellent round to watch, a few Jorge and Mikko battling it out. Can you talk us through the key holes out there today?
I mean, it was close, every holes. I didn't play very well today, and I didn't really find my rhythm as yesterday, but yeah, I'm happy.
You can take this experience on and move on to the next few weeks and take confidence from your performance.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's still good to have a second place. I'm still chasing the first victory, but it was close this week. I think I will learn a lot about it and then try to be more consistent on the next few weeks and see what happened. We did great works with my staff, so all good.
See, Boxy, earlier on, you suggested that winning is winning. He's won on the Challenge Tour. He knows how to win. But when those wins were, you know, 5-6 years ago, does it still count?
Yeah, it still counts. Still counts. I mean,
I'm not quite sure it does.
Well, does Nicholas's majors count? Does Woods' majors count? They're a long time.
I'm suggesting
not anymore. Oh my God, the man doesn't care anymore, Ben. He's gone completely.
All I'm suggesting is that
not anymore.
When you've won recently, then that winning feeling is in your mind. But if, you know, long time between drinks, you sometimes, you know, lose your legs a little quicker.
Well, very good analogy there, Dan. I like that. Look, I know he picked up €295,000. Benjamin Hubert is a good, solid player who will win tournaments. He's a bit like Campillo. I said, my goodness, I did plug Campillo for a good 18 months.
Yeah,
but,
apart from when he won, but anyway.
No, I didn't. I plugged him in my stand-up with Sky, I promise, with John Morgan. You throw me completely off track there. What was I saying? You were going about... much help. Were talking to me. There's a producer talking in my ear. A bit like Campillo. I think, you know, it won't be long till Hubert wins one. I know Campillo never won any Challenge Tour events, but he was knocking at the door. And Hubert's another one of those who, I'm not going to say he's going to win every single year, but he's a good... top quality, top 75 of the Race Dubai player.
Ben, he sounded fairly philosophical, didn't he, in that interview that we just heard? Fairly upbeat for coming second. I mean, he played well to get into the playoff and needed to birdie the last, which he did. He had a long eagle putt and was beaten by the better man on the day, and he's been close before. Is he a player winner waiting to happen category?
I think so. This kind of level in a tournament where you don't have to necessarily be long off the tee, because he's kind of a neat and tight, very, very similar to Korhonen and Campillo. I liked how he finished. I mean, he birdied 16. He hit it really close there. Bit unlucky on 17. He seemed to get the ball skidded on him a little bit when he pitched into that green and then birdied the last. So he can take pride in that. He shot 69 when leading going into the final round. If you do that, eventually the door will swing open, won't it? I guess it's difficult for a player like him because you feel like you've got to take these chances because next week the Tommy Fleetwoods of this world are playing. But he'll have his chances perhaps later in the year somewhere like Kronz in the mountains or even the KLM Open, something like that. I could definitely see him winning because he hits loads of greens. And like Richard said, he has won 6 times on the Challenge Tour and it counts for something. I think this will be more valuable to him. Seeing that he held it together well will be valuable. It'll be fresher in the memory. And he, like I say, just found himself in the wrong spot on that final hole. And look, Mikko Korhonen made a 12-foot putt. What can you do about it?
Yeah, he shot a 64 on the Saturday with a back nine of 28. Not too many scores of 28 on tour. I know Mr. Robert Lee, friend of the show's, shot 27.
Twice.
And goes on about an awful
non-stop,
lot.
Non-stop.
Let's hear from Jorge Campillo, who certainly took his final round a little bit differently to Benjamin Hubert. He was disappointed to miss out on back-to-back victories.
Last week I finished like a champion, today I didn't. I had the tournament and I missed a few tee shots there in the middle of the round. That cost me the tournament. But the last three holes, I think I played great. The last three holes, just 17, hit it over the pin. I thought I hit a great shot in there, and then 18, I thought I hit a good chip, but it was 8 metres wide, so kind of disappointed finish.
I guess that's the difference, Ben, isn't it? Because a winner from the previous week just expects to do it again, but he missed a short one, I think, on 14, didn't he? And then bogeyed the next, and that was his race run, pretty much, I think.
Yeah, I think it shows you the transformative effect of winning, because prior to Morocco, the one criticism obviously you'd have had with Jorge is that he hadn't shown that sort of ruthlessness to go ahead and win a tournament. And immediately, 1 week later, third place is not good enough. And I think before, third place was good enough. But look, he's up to 59th in the world now. So, you know, had he won, it probably would have been top 50. But he knows that a couple more big weeks and he will be inside that top 50, playing in the majors, looking for that second win. And it's all positive. I think obviously the immediate aftermath is one of disappointment not to even be in that playoff, which he really should have been. But when he reflects on the fortnight, finishing first and third and climbing, 35 spots in the world, it's all good stuff, really.
You're spot on there, Ben, because I was talking to somebody, names will remain silent, but I was talking to somebody that knows Campillo really well. And before he won in Morocco, he said that he's he was always quite negative. You know, I'm going to carry on. I keep finishing second. I'd play well, and all of a sudden somebody beats me, you know. And it was a little bit, well, I'm just going to keep finishing second and third. Not that he didn't have the guts to get over the line. It was just, you know, his attitude wasn't that brilliant. Now he's won one, and then all of a sudden, you know, it turns around, to, you know, in his opening words, you know, I played like a champion last week. This week I didn't. You know, the 6 inches of grey matter. I keep saying you know a lot. I must stop that. The 6 inches of grey matter between your ears make a massive difference, don't they?
Definitely. I mean, to a player like Campillo as well, I think it's interesting because when people like me try and work out who's going to win golf tournaments, you look at a player like Campillo and it's easy to think they're kind of just a run-of-the-mill European Tour player. And I say that in full admiration of those people. But when you think that they took him along, I think, to the Ryder Cup last year as one of the three or four players who were invited along to go in the team room.
Did they?
And when you look back at, yeah, I think he was with Lucas Bjerregaard.
Right, yeah, interesting.
I think Eddie Pepperell couldn't go because he had a stomach bug, but there were a couple of others involved. I think Matt Wallace turned it down. But there was certainly a few players who went along there, and Jorge was one of them. And I think that tells you what his peers must think about him, what Thomas Bjorn must think about him. And now, I think a little bit different to Corjon, and I think now Campillo's sights will be on making himself into a world-class player. And I don't think it's necessarily beyond him. So watch for him, definitely, potentially in that next Ryder Cup side.
10 Chinese players made the cut, including 14-year-old Yang Quang, who finished tied 55th overall after becoming the second youngest player to make the cuts in a European Tour event. Chen Lang Guan of China was 1 month younger when he made the cut at the 2013 Masters, also obviously age 14. 2004, the year Yang Quang was born, and our friends at the European Tour rolled off some bullet points as to what else was happening in 2004. And I think this is just designed to make everyone feel old. And some of these things, I've got no idea what they are. Boxy, do you know what Facebook is?
I do know what Facebook
are
is.
You
my
on
children
Facebook?
Is, am I?
Are you, well, there you go. Mark Zuckerberg launched Facebook. Ben probably knows what Facebook is. I'm sure you don't know this one. Kanye West released his debut album. Do you know who Kanye West is, Boxy?
Kanye West plays West Ham?
Ben, do you know what his debut album was called?
The College Dropout.
Did you really know that?
He's got a script.
He had the script sent through
last night by Matt Vines, our producer.
Yeah, so I know, but that's what I'm asking. Did he really? And Ben wouldn't lie. Did you really know that?
Both those things are true. Yes, I have the script. Yes, I knew that.
The College Dropout.
Who, Ben?
No. Give us a few tracks off The College Dropout, Ben. Come on, prove your cred.
That one where they go, it all falls down. I don't know if that's
the name of the track.
I know that one.
Do you know that one, Boxy?
Yeah.
Come on, give us a rendition.
It all falls down. There you go. I sang it in a pub.
That's not how it goes.
Down, nah.
Does our producer know any of the tracks?
No, he doesn't know.
On College Dropout. Yeah, what else do you think we're talking about? Through the Wire, Boxy? Through the Barricades, Phil Collins, 1983.
Okay, right. No, but hang on.
I know, wasn't that with Spandau Ballet?
I'll tell you one thing that did happen in 2004.
I don't know any of these.
Did you know I got engaged for the third time in my life?
What, the third time in 2004? Yeah. No, you
not in 2004, my third time in my life.
Well, in 2004?
Yeah.
For
well, I got
third
the first
time.
One. The first one went off with my best mate when I was away playing tournaments.
Okay.
The second one went off with my best mate when I was playing golf tournaments.
How many friends you got left?
One. Not many. Yeah. And then the third one, I've just finished the third one. But anyway, yeah, there you go. Ben didn't know that, did you?
Have you introduced me to your...
No, I didn't.
No. Dan Roback's trying to take my new one out at the moment.
Finally, friends aired in their final season and Lionel Messi made his Barcelona debut. That was the line. Any thoughts on that, Boxy? Messi?
Messi? Well, only that he played fantastically against Liverpool the other day, scored 2-3-0. Yeah. That's the end of that. They're through to the final.
In terms of the young players coming through in China, we saw Ashen Wu, who won at the course before, lead at some stage over the course of the Saturday. I think it was back nine when he fell apart. Do we expect more and more Chinese players to come out on the European Tour and to be competitive? Is it just a matter of numbers? Have they got plenty of talented performers coming through?
They got plenty of talented performers coming through. I remember when I first went out to China, you'd watch them play. It was very nerve-wracking for them, actually, to be perfectly honest, because there's a massive amount of pressure on them.
The crowds were great.
Oh, the crowds were fantastic. But I remember talking, you and Murray and I were having a chat about it, you know, and you and I were saying, you know, eventually there is going to be a lot of good players that come from this part of the world. And now not only are there good players coming from there, they're good players who are winning.
Ben, your thoughts on a Chinese influx, Hao Tong Li leading the way? I guess he is a very good player. Any others that you've seen over the the course of the last year or so that you think might break out and, I guess, ultimately contend for a major?
Obviously, it's taking it to the next level, as we've been talking about with Benjamin Hebert. It's no guarantee, but there's so much talent here coming through that it's a matter of time. Although I would say that Hao Tong is way ahead. And, you know, he's nowhere near done improving yet. And I think he's going to be the one who probably the first one to get into the top 10. That will be my prediction.
Speaking of top 10s, Richard Boxall, Esquire, can you give us the top 10 from the Volvo China Open, please?
I can, yes. In 10th spot with the American Sean Crocker was 14 under. And there was a fairly large tie in 5th, Roman Lancask, David Lipsky, Maiko Lorenzo Vera, Jordan Smith and Ashen Wu. They were all on 15 under par. One player at 16 under par, Hao Tong Li, or Li Hao Tong, whichever way around you want to put it. Jorge Campillo, another good week, 19 under. Then two players played off, Korhonen and Benjamin Hebert. And Korhonen was the winner with an 11-12 footer on the first playoff hole, the 18th.
So last week's predictions, a reminder of the format. We get two picks apiece. One though has to be from outside of the top 50 in the final 2018 Race 2 Dubai standings. 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a missed cut. Robert Lee went for Thomas Detry, who withdrew, and Christian Bezuidenhout, who was missed cut. Therefore, minus 5 points for Robert. Ewan Murray, Jordan Smith, who was tied 5th, gets 10 points. Also, Kurt Kitayama, minus 5. So, therefore, it's 5 points in total. Kurt Kitayama missed the cut. And Chris Ryan, I think he's an author, isn't he? Didn't he do all the SAS books? Alexander Bjork, 5 points. And Guido Migliozzi, who was tied 32nd, 0 points. So 5 points for Chris Ryan. Chris is a golf coach, of course. I knew that, really.
Oh, exactly. What's the overall now on that?
Overall, presenters down to 140, which is me and Rob and other people that get when I can't do it, and Rob's in America.
Yeah.
Co-presenters up to 55 and guests up to 20. So that's you, Ben, 20.
Okay, well, we'll build on that this week. I've got the first and second, so don't worry.
I love it, love it. In the Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game, Alan Fenwick is still top of the overall leaderboard, while Rasmus Petila scored the most points from the Volvo China Open. If you want to get involved, you can by heading to fantasyrace.europeantour.com and by registering your team. Boxy, we need the top 10 in the Race 2 Dubai, please.
Okay, starting in 10th position, Bryson DeChambeau. Francesco Molinari is 9th. Hao Tong Li is in 8th. David Lipsky's 7th. 6th is Lou Eustace, and Ian Poulter is 5th. Justin Harding, young South African, 4th. 3rd is Shane Lowry. Jorge Campillo is now up to 2nd, and it's the American who leads the way, Kevin Kisner.
Two other news now, and there was a surprise winner on the PGA Tour as world number 417. Max Homa claimed a 3-shot victory at the Wells Fargo Championship. Justin Rose was 3rd on 11 under, while playing partner Rory McIlroy, 2 back overnight, eventually finished in a tie for 8th after a disappointing 73. Both Rory and Justin were in a good position to win that event, Boxy.
They
unfortunately
were.
None came through.
No, they didn't, but it's, you know, Rory had a bad week, finished 8th. It's really not that bad. Paul Casey played well as well. He finished quite nicely in that as well in the top 10. Talking of top 10s, do you want the top 10 of the world rankings?
Not yet. Just a word from Ben on Max Homa, because number 417 in the world, I suspect that he wasn't on many previewer shortlists for the PGA Tour event last week, the Wells Fargo.
No, he wouldn't have been on any, I don't think. But he's a story of triumph, a patience of a different kind to that shown by Korhonen, I guess, because a couple of years ago, he had the driving yips. He said he was embarrassed to be playing. He could not keep the ball on the golf course. He stopped practicing with his irons and his putter because he just needed to fix the driver. And he found some determination. He went back to his old coach. He worked really hard. And then even then, at the end of 2018, he had to come home in 30 in the final event of the web.com season to get his PGA Tour card. He did that. And 6 months later, he's in the Masters, he's in everything. So a brilliant story of triumph against the odds. So yeah, good on him.
He played supremely well because those around him, Boxy, the likes of McIlroy and Rose, you expect to put the pedal to the floor down the back nine. But I mean, McIlroy again, I mean, I know he's won this year and we've had this conversation so many times, but he does throw in some some poor holes, doesn't he?
He did, yeah. I mean, you know, it wasn't a bad start to the back nine. You know, he double bogey seven at the par five, which was not good. Yeah, he picked up a birdie at the, at the 13th and the 15th. Did drop a shot there at the 14th. It just wasn't to be. But, you know, he still finished eighth, McIlroy, crikey. I mean, he's you know, another top 10 finish. It helps towards his great season he's having, as far as I'm concerned.
And nice to see Justin Rose with a bit of form, Ben, after what happened at Augusta.
Yeah, he went into this with a really lacking confidence and playing down his chances, all because of a real disappointment at Augusta, but didn't take him long to figure it out. And the same goes for Paul Casey, again, after a difficult Masters to bounce back like that. I suppose we should probably expect it. But just on Homer, I think we get shock winners. We don't usually get shock winners who look so good. He looked like he'd been doing it all his life, didn't he? And to win in that fashion on that golf course against those opponents who are playing in the group ahead of him, just a brilliant performance.
Rose or McIlroy for the PGA, Ben?
Probably Rory, just ahead of Rose. Yeah. But I like both. I like both for Beth Page. It's going to be long. It's going to be soft. It's going to be a competition between long drivers, really. When they were last there for a major in 2009, Lucas Glover, one of the elite ball strikers, won it, and it'll be another player of that caliber, I suspect. So Rose or Rory or DJ or, you know, someone like that.
We need the top 10 in the world. Richard Boxall has got the details.
You do. Okay. Ricky Fowler is 10th. Xander Schauffele is in 9th. Bryson DeChambeau is 8th. Francesco Molinari is 7th. Tiger Woods is 6th. Justin Thomas, 5th. 4th is Rory McIlroy. 3rd is Brooks Koepka. Justin Rose is 2nd. And Dustin Johnson still leads the way.
On to this week's events and the Betfred British Masters at Hillside Golf Club in the northwest of England. Tommy Fleetwood, the latest star to host the tournament, following in the footsteps of his fellow countrymen Ian Poulter, Luke Donald, Lee Westwood, and most recently, Justin Rose. You know all about the course, don't you, Mr. Boxall?
I do, yeah. I played there in a long, long time ago, way back in 1981, when it was the English amateur. It was called the Brabazon. I played well. I finished 2nd. Fantastic course. Two different sort of nines, really. The front nine, you start off, you tee off on the first hole. Don't worry, I'm not going to talk you through every hole. You're on that first hole, the railway line runs right the way down the left-hand side, so many a drive eases its way out to the right-hand side. Fairly flat, front nine. And then the back nine is between tall pine trees and dunes. It still links in, gets very windy. Probably one of the best back nines there is in the United Kingdom, I'd say. I think it's a fantastic course.
Ben, is it a course that you've taken any interest in over the years? Because it's not been a course we've seen on the European Tour. It has hosted various amateur tournaments over the years. Is it a classic links course?
Yeah, and open qualifiers as well. So there will be some players in here who've played it a number of times. I don't know it anywhere near as well as Boxy. I've not played it. I've not walked it. But it looks fantastic. And certainly positionally, it's in that lovely stretch of land. I'd stress to the listeners who don't know this how close it is to Birkdale. You can walk from one to the other in about 3 minutes, if that. So I was kind of looking to see if anyone did well at the Open in 2017 and might do well here. Someone like Matthew Southgate, for instance, who will find comfort back on the West Coast. But it's great to see a golf tournament in England played by the coast.
Tommy Fleetwood is the host. How much pressure is there on him as the host? Is his time going to be taken by the broadcasters and the sponsors rather than practicing? How does it work for a host on course?
It's a lot of stuff you've got to do. I wouldn't expect him to win. He's obviously a top quality player, but I would have thought that would take it out of him. You know, he'll have to come in. We're doing the Sky commentary there. He'll have to come in. I would have thought and have a little chat with us and then a few interviews and up in the Sky zone. There'll be plenty for him to do. Dinners he'll have to go to. After his round, I doubt he'd better hit balls on the range.
But time away from the range is what I'm saying.
Yeah, he'll have to do plenty of things. I mean, that's what happens when you're the host, isn't it, really? Which host has won the British Masters so far?
I don't think any of them. Ben, I don't think any have won, have they?
No, Lee Westwood was 15th. Justin Rose missed the cut. Luke Donald missed the cut. And Ian Poulter was 33rd. So none of them have looked like winning. And the fact that it could force a missed cut upon Justin Rose just tells you how much of a burden it can be.
Who of those top players do you think might prosper this week? Ben, we've sort of discounted Fleetwood to a certain extent. We've got Eddie Pepperell, who's the defending champion, Tyrrell Hatton, Matt Wallace, Lee Westwood. Of those top players who have been playing in America recently that are performing this week, which ones do you think might be towards the top of the leaderboard come on Sunday?
Yeah, they're quite hard to judge. I guess if you're looking for a real links specialist, then Tyrrell Hatton is a two-time winner of the Dunhill Links. He's had one of those years where he's looked very, very close to doing something very good at various points, but not quite gone ahead and done it. So Tyrrell Hatton would be a rock solid one. But I think possibly the guys we've been seeing playing on the European Tour lately might be an advantage here, because they've been playing some similar golf courses, at least a tough golf course in Morocco, some cooler conditions, and also playing a bit more often, because the season does get a bit fragmented if you're in the majors and things like that, and they have to sort of pick and choose where they tee up. So I'd be looking at Yusel Outen to play well again, Jordan Smith, who's really, really playing well at the moment, and also Ryan Fox. If you're looking for a guy who plays well in the UK and Ireland and loves links golf, then Ryan Fox is certainly one of those, and he was in decent form when we last saw him in Malaysia. I'm not quite sure why he's been off for 5 or 6 weeks, probably just picking and choosing his schedule, but the New Zealand are certainly ready to go and win again, I would think.
What are your thoughts, Boxy, on the likes of Eddie Pepperell and Matt Wallace? We've seen them play stateside more often than not, haven't we, over the last few months?
They're all good players. They can do it. You know, they can do it.
But just schedule-wise, you're playing over there, then you're coming for 1 week, and then you're back over to the States.
Yeah, no, I think they'll be fine with that. They will be fine with that. I think it's when you do it constantly, back forward, back forward, back forward, that's when it becomes very difficult. You know, I would have think 95% of golfers like links golf. It's natural, it's the way it should be played. I used to love it. It was my favourite.
We were talking before we came on air, though, if you're a good golfer, you're a good golfer. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
Is there such a thing as links specialists?
I don't think there's links specialists, no. I think if you were American, you come over, you never played a links before, because you can't get the turf that runs like links turf. That's the problem. Then you have got to come over and learn it. But as a kid, you know, growing up in the United Kingdom, you're brought up on that sort of stuff. And I think it's just a great way of playing. Always, you know, always use, never fight the wind. Always keep the wind as your friend. Don't treat it as an enemy. It's an interesting, beautiful way of playing golf. The yardage book goes out the window when it's windy, which I like even more. Players have just got to eyeball it and just feel the distance. And that's what it all comes down to. It comes down to the feel and where it's going to bounce. And you've got to really think your way around when it's breezy.
So this is something that, as you play, you get the feel of the course.
Yeah.
You know, it can change from day to day.
Oh, massively. You can play, you know, you've got courses where the front nine goes out and then the back nine comes back in. And you can be unlucky in an open championship and you can play the front nine into the wind, and then you can turn for home if you tee off at the wrong time and play the back nine into the wind as well. What have I played? 14 opens, and I would say, you know, the wind does tend to change around quite a lot.
Because I know, Ben, talk about link specialists. When we have a look for winners of events, we tend to try and sort of correlate sort of form with, you know, various links venues, or even just venues that are, you know, by the coast on foreign shores. And we look for players who can maybe repeat that in various stages of their career around on their schedule and in links venues and the likes of Qatar and Morocco and one or two others.
Yeah, I certainly would. I mean, I think I agree with what Richard says about the very best players in the world. Like, there's no excuse for Dustin Johnson not to be able to play Carnoustie. But I do think there are players who elevate their games when they play links golf. Matthew Southgate will be one of the best examples. You look at the sort of four or five best performances of his career. Two of them have come in the Open, two have come in the Irish Open. And he was, you know, winner at St Andrews as an amateur, things like that. The fact that Shane Lowry won as an amateur. I know it wasn't pure links course at County Louth, but again, it levelled the playing field and brought what he could do. It elevated it somewhat. And I think we will see that across all the links venues this summer and quite possibly this week. I just think it brings in players who all of a sudden think that this is terrain on which they can compete with the very best players in the world.
OK, let's get some predictions. Ben, you're first up, because I'm sure you're going to be a little bit more considered than we might be. Who do you like this week? Give us two.
The one I really, really like is Tom Lewis. I know it looks a little bit like he's gone off the boil since a great start to the year, which followed on from a great end to last year. But he was second for greens in regulation in Morocco last time, and I felt that was a nice step back in the right direction. After, again, he went to Australia, then he went to Mexico because he got in the WGC. And it can just upset your rhythm, I would think, flying all across the world, certainly for a player who hasn't been doing that. He's got loads of experience at Hillside from Open Championship qualifiers. He obviously first came to prominence when he led the Open as an amateur at Sandwich. He nearly won the Dunhill Links. And if you go back to his last two starts in England last year, he won on the Challenge Tour, which turned his career around. And then he was fifth in the British Masters. So coming back to England, playing by the coast, I think it's a perfect formula for him. And the other one, we had Jorge Campillo finally win his first European Tour event a couple of weeks ago. Benjamin Hebben nearly did it on Sunday. Mikko Korhonen, a late bloomer. And I think Mike Lorenzo Vera can take real inspiration from that. He finished fifth last week as well. He was second in Qatar, which is always a good event for players who go well in the wind. He nearly won by the coast in Sicily. And I think actually he's from Biarritz, which is about as windy as it gets. So hopefully the wind blows. I think Mike Lorenzo Vera could finally land what would be an emotional breakthrough.
Okay, Mike Lorenzo Vera and Tom Lewis for Ben. Boxy, give us your two and your whys and wherefores.
Well, I haven't got quite as long as a whys and wherefores as Ben. He's studied a lot more than I do. But I'm going to go for Joost Luiten, who was 55th on the race to Dubai last year. Yes, he was injured. Or he's been injured. He's come back and he's playing well. I think he's a consistent player. I think he's very good on links, like the way he plays. And the other one is Adrian Otegi. I just think Adrian Otegi is a good young Spanish player. He's won two events. None of them are what I call proper 72-hole stroke play. I fancy he might win one of those. And the other reason I've chosen him is because I sat next to him on the flight coming home from Morocco on my birthday. Thank you so much.
That is the reasoning that I like.
It's one of the other ones.
You know,
I like that sort of stuff.
What would happen if, I don't know...
You'd sat next to me. Yeah, exactly. I would have said you'll definitely get a caddying job at the British Masters.
And he's got a bit of hillside form?
Yes,
he thinks he has.
I said to him, I finished second there. I said back in 1981. He said, I did. He said in 2010. Now he might have finished second somewhere, but I don't think it was hillside. But there you go.
Excellent. Well, I like that. See, Ben's gone through all the stats, greens and regulation, the lot improving. The numbers are great, and that's his reasoning. And your reasoning, he sat next to me on the plane
on my birthday.
Excellent.
On my birthday.
So if it wasn't your birthday, would you have chosen someone else?
No, I might have chosen him to come second.
Okay.
But no, he's here. I spoke to him for a long time. He's a very interesting lad.
I think Otegi did get through hillside qualifying back in like 2010, 2011 for the Open. So I think he has been there and played it just over 36 holes.
Yeah, he was trying to tell me he mentioned the Brabazon, but I mean, I don't know. He may have got a bit confused about something, but we've had a look earlier on today and the Brabazon wasn't played there in 2010.
I've found it if you wanted to. Yes. It was the qualifying for the Amateur Championship. There you go.
It was the qualifying for the Amateur Championship in 2010.
2011, I think, and he finished a couple of shots off the lead. So,
well, there you are. Thank you. No, it was. And I'll tell you something else. Jorge Campillo caddied for him. Did you know that?
Ah, there you go.
There you go.
About to be inspired.
The only issue I've got with that, Boxy, is that A, Adrian has got that in terms of the hillside and so on and so wrong. So he might have got the fact that Jorge Campillo caddied for him wrong.
He might have done.
You were both in first class and might have had a drink at the time. Were you delayed in the airport?
100%. I came straight from the course, straight onto the flight. But he was on water because I said to him, are you going to have a drink? Are you listening to me? You're not listening to me, are you? I can't hear. Our producer's shouting in your ear. I can't hear what he's saying.
He's saying that we've got to wrap it up, so I've not got that much time for my particular selection. So therefore, I will tell you, this week I'm going to go for Eddie Pepperell, the defending champion, and Paul Waring, who surely will know the area well, I'm guessing a little bit here, but has been in fair form. Sort of. Those are my selections.
Okay. No white, no wise or.
Well, we're out of time. I'm being hurried along.
That's the easiest way in the world to get out of it.
I'm being hurried along. I'd love to wax.
That was a bottle job, Ben, wasn't it?
Paul Waring. That is your lot for now. Next week, we'll be back with the Betfred British Masters review, and we'll be looking ahead to the second major of the year, which is the USPGA Championship at Bethpage. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via the website, as well as Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram. But for now, from Ben Coley, Ben, nice to speak to you.
And you, gents, thanks for having me on.
And Mr. Richard Boxall, Boxy, good stuff.
Thank you very much, my friend.
And then it says here, and from me, Robert Lee, it's goodbye. So from me, Robert Lee, talk about copy and paste. We'll speak to you next week.